to Barkov. For the empty net, score! It's a hat trick! Sam Reinhart! The first ever postseason hat trick by a member of the Florida Panthers. Sent down towards the empty net. Reinhart with his fourth! John Bellavo, 1956. Mike Bossy, 1982. Wayne Gretzky, 1985. And now Sam Reinhart. Seven goals in a Stanley Cup final. The Panthers begin to celebrate. Panther perfection. The Florida Panthers win their second consecutive Stanley Cup. Bennett wins the Conn Smythe Trophy. Scored 15 goals during the postseason, including five in the Stanley Cup final.
Alexander Barkov. Let's do it again.
I mean, we had an incredible amount of depth is the biggest thing. And I think a lot of people discounted that, the way that everyone was choosing all, every team over us in each round. Depth is what wins you series. You know, it's so hard to rely on a power player, a line or two. You need the depth, and we have that.
We deserve this one. It was a grind, and our depth and our team. Difference between our team and most teams is we don't look to, you know, one or two guys just to, you know, when things are tough. Like, you look at yourself in the mirror, you look to the guy next to you, and you know you better be working because the guy next to you is going to be working. So, you know, we're very lucky to have that depth, and our team is a true team.
Yeah, pretty lucky to be playing in Florida as well.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. We are live at the Joe Carter Celebrity Classic from Glen Abbey Golf Course in Oakville. The Florida Panthers have won back-to-back Stanley Cups after disposing of the Oilers in six games. Connor McDavid did just a couple points in the final four games of the series, minus seven. Not so great for him, as the world's best hockey player still looking for his first Stanley Cup, Brent. That was a dominating six-game performance, as dominating a performance as a six-game series win can be.
Yeah, it was. I don't know what you're talking about. Sam Bennett has his cup, so I don't know what you're talking about. The best player looking for. He's got two shiny mugs. He even willfully, barely, but willfully accepted the Conn Smythe last night. Yeah, there are storylines aplenty. You got your wish. We're living in your dreamscape where it's like, yeah, Connor McDavid is still without, and that makes Ben Ennis the happiest man in the world. So I'm happy for you, man.
Yeah, that's, I mean, a bit extreme, but I will accept the charges because I do think that that is actually the most interesting storyline going into next season.
That's right. Plead no contest right now.
It's the Panthers looking for a third consecutive cup, and Connor McDavid still looking for his first. By the way, yeah, again, we're at Glen Abbey Golf Course getting ready for the start of the Joe Carter Celebrity Classic. We're going to be joined by tons of amazing guests here, and we're on an extra hour here until 10 o'clock. Lots of all-time great hockey players, baseball players that are going to be wandering through here. We'll try and grab as many as possible.
Always more football players than I would think. I was like, oh, yeah. Like, literally everyone loves Joe Carter. It is the annual reminder. And he would remind us that that's not what the day is about. But I will say that is like a top three takeaway every day. They're like, wow, just one of the most beloved humans we have.
Joe Carter is a magnetic personality. No doubt we're going to talk to him today as well. But yeah, Dwight Freeney in the house, Hall of Famer. Yeah. So yeah, we'll talk
to Vanderjagt.
Yeah. He's not an idiot kicker to me because he's Oakville's own. Okay?
I wasn't even going
to
mention it.
Yeah, this is his hometown. About. Anyways, okay. So to the McDavid point and my correct point about this being the most interesting timeline for the NHL as opposed to him winning a Stanley Cup, anyone could do that. Like, obviously, Gretzky did it. Crosby did it. The next one, still waiting to do his. And it did feel like everything was aligning perfectly to have it land in his lap. But no, we go wanting another season. We'll delve a little deeper into the series in yesterday's game. But, okay, so tell me, did you have the visceral reaction of disappointment for Connor McDavid? Because, you know, you're on Main Street as the new Captain Canada. The passing of the torch at the Olympics. That you have now emotional investment in him now that he's worn the colors.
Yes.
Now that he's won a Four Nations Face-Off Festival.
Yeah.
Did you feel the hurt that no doubt he felt and Oilers fans felt yesterday?
Yeah, I want to, like, there are levels to this, right? It's like, was I more upset when the Leafs lost to the Panthers or the Oilers did? The Leafs, like, let's not overstate what this was, but yeah, the whole third period, I'm watching that. I you know, it's almost like it felt like his dad. Like, come on, Connor, you got it in you, bud. Have the shift. Turn the tide is how I felt. So it was not the visceral reaction of how I feel when the Leafs lose. But, yeah, it was more about the idea of – it was more about sadness for McDavid immediately at the final horn than it is, like, even anger or whatever emotion I was feeling watching the Panthers take care of business.
I don't know, and apparently this was the case in the evaluation of the people that were there and listening to the Oilers speak postgame. Like last year after Game 7, the loss in Game 7, after building up to that Game 7 with three consecutive victories to get off the mat down 3-0, there was, by every reporting, a degree of sadness that exists in that Oilers team, whereas this year it was more like frustration and anger. You're disappointed you lost the Stanley Cup. There is, it's not like, woof, it's just a couple of breaks.
Yes.
Go, you know, the other way, and the Oilers are there hoisting the cup over their heads. Like, I suppose they could win all the overtime games.
Right.
Which would mean that, I guess, we're going to a Game 7. But like I said, 255 plus minutes of lead, which is a cup final record for the Florida Panthers. There'll be some criticism lobbed Connor McDavid's way for the performance in the series and just the one goal. And I mentioned it, just a couple of points in the last four games of the series and the minus seven of it all. You know, no question, when you are as good as Connor McDavid, maybe you can overcome some of what the Panthers threw at you. But full credit to the Panthers, who were as dominant a team as I can remember against the world's best player.
Yeah, as dominant a team. Like Matthew Tkachuk, we heard it in the intro. This team is such a weird one to talk about, because at the outset of this version of Panthers 2.0, it was not about the team. It was about one man coming in and changing everything. It was about, Sasha Barkov's a nice player and Bob will make a save here or there, but Matthew Tkachuk, he's the new sheriff in town. And now, three years of cup finals, 4 or 5 years after the trade, you're looking at a true team through and through. We'll talk about this later on in the show, but like, you look at the counting stats total for all the Panthers greats, it's not what you think of for all-time great of a dynasty team. You know, like Sasha Barkov is the perfect epitome of what it is. A tremendous player. Of course a first-line center, a Selke guy, but not if you actually sit down and have GMs do it, but you, with your buddies at the cottage, do your favorite thing in the whole world this, or my favorite thing in the whole world this summer, just power rank dudes in the NHL. Mm. Barkov gets thrown in there, but it's later than a lot of his peers because of the way he's seen. And I think he is the epitome of that. So, yeah, team, through and through. It wasn't two guys. It wasn't three guys. Even the guys you think of aren't as lofty as the two or three you think of on the Edmonton side of things.
No, six Panthers players finished with at least 20 points in the playoffs, which is stupid. And the Conn Smythe voting, Sam Bennett does win, but only 11 of 18 first place votes. I did wonder with Sam Reinhart's four goal performance, as he finishes tied with Carter Verhaeghe and Matthew Tkachuk for the playoff scoring lead for the Florida Panthers. I was like, is he making a late charge? Like, how many goals does Reinhart, even though two of them were empty netters, like, if he scores five goals?
Hat trick of empty netters in a cup-clinching game.
Yeah.
The other thing, well, because I'm trying to remember, we've talked to guys, or like, I believe you would have been there. I've certainly talked to people about this, the idea of, my understanding, and we'll talk to Luke Fox today and he can correct me or not, but is that you can write in a Conn Smythe award with an asterisk of like,
if
this guy scores in overtime, maybe give him the Conn Smythe. So I just don't think Reinhart was enough on anybody's bingo card.
He scores 10 goals.
He scores, I guess now we have to do that, of just the asterisk of if any of these six guys have five goals in a cup final game, then you absolutely must give them the Conn Smythe trophy. It is so funny to think of it in that way. But, yeah, no, he just wasn't enough. If Marchand had four.
Yeah.
In the last game, though, very, very different conversation.
Oh, 100%.
We're talking about here, yeah.
Yeah. There's no question that he could have superseded the playoff goal-scoring leader in Sam Bennett, who finishes with 15, 22 points. One back of the playoff scoring lead. Yeah, it's crazy. Verhaeghe, 23 points. Reinhart, 23 points. Tkachuk, 23 points. Barkov, even without the goal scoring, what, did he finish the playoffs on like an 8-game goalless drought?
Yeah.
He had 22 points. Bennett, 22 points. Marchand, 20 points. It was just they overwhelmed the Oilers with their depth, and especially when you're the Oilers, you're chasing every single game. Yes. The outside, there was one game that they scored the first goal of the hockey game. It was game one. Other than that, they were fighting an uphill battle every first period.
Oh, I was going to say they didn't, but they did. They just then capitulated the lead and then got it back. Oilers, baby.
Yeah. They were down 3-1. They had to come back, and they won that game. Yeah. When you're trying to come back in a game and you're the Edmonton Oilers, what happens is that McDavid and Draisaitl got to play together, which means you open yourself up to the Panthers' depth, which is what happened routinely in this series.
Yeah, what would loading it up even look like for the Panthers? Like, how different would look than the lineup they just rolled out there? It's like, on any given night, yes, Maurice could say, all right, Bennett, Marchand, and Barkov. He could just as easily say, Reinhardt, Lundell, Listerinen. It is the power of their team, is that there's no quit, there's no give up, and there is a weak point on the Panthers. It's a problem for everybody else. It's not a problem for the Panthers, is that the rest of the team is so good, they can play the weak point 8 minutes a night, and it's the fourth line. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they've gone about it. You look at the way they've rolled ice time all playoffs long. It's been that Gajdovic line. He's not even in there all the time, but it's like he is getting his 8-9 minutes, and then you're putting a lot on the other three guys, the other three lines, I should say, to make everything about the Leafs. Boy, oh boy, what must it feel like when it's not all on one guy, all on two? And they have guys that you should be. Sam Reinhardt scored 57 goals, and he's one of the first six for Team Canada. I think it's pretty fair to look at him and say, hey, you do it all. But they never do that of him. I know, bad day to make the case for that.
Yeah, he scores four goals.
But they didn't ask him to. He just happened to do it.
I mean, he did open the scoring on one of the nicest goals of the postseason.
My point is not that Sam Reinhardt's not capable of that. The point is that no one guy on that team, even Bob, feels like, I got to do it, or it doesn't get done. And how do you think Connor and Leon, forget about the Leafs for 5 seconds, how do you think Connor and Leon feel about they can have an off night and get it done? Yeah, against the Kings, sure. Against the real team, not so much.
How do you think the Oilers feel about paying Evan Bouchard $10 million? Because, he and Matisse
Ekholm, they better love it. regardless of their thoughts and wishes on the matter, they better be really excited about it.
Yeah, he had a game, and nobody covered themselves in glory on the Edmonton side of things, but he was -4, and he and Ekholm on the second goal at the offensive blue line with the turnover, -4 in the hockey game. He's a restricted free agent. He's a key part of what the Oilers are doing here. And, the part of today's conversation around the Oilers will be, did they miss their window here? Because things are about to get a whole lot more expensive in Edmonton.
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, Bouchard is it's such a tricky case, right? Because nobody, even somebody who would want to run and highlight all of the warts, understands what you're getting in that player. And again, when you look at the way the Oilers are built, unless they're going to completely change things, and they're not, because they're going to welcome Connor McDavid back with open arms, if he's willing to return after this contract is up, I think they'd be happy to have him back. This is the type of player you need. You need a guy that can ignite transition offense on his own, because he either does it with McDavid and it's exponentially beneficial to the Oilers, or he does it when McDavid's not on the ice, and you're able to replicate a little tiny bit of that. The power play is so important. He's a key part of that. Now, power play was good before Evan Bouchard got there. It's not to say nobody else could take that role. It's just such a tricky spot where everyone understands what he is, and everyone understands every part of what he is. I don't think there are that many people out there that go, oh, the flaws are overstated. No, we understand what they are. Mm. Or the guy who produces the way he does would be much more of a lock for Team Canada than the conversations we've had. So, yeah, that's the place I think you're at with Bouchard. And for a team that has a lot of business to take care of, that's one that feels like it can linger for a really long time, because I can see the Oilers saying, okay, buddy, we got 10. I understand. Cale Makar makes 9.
Yeah.
And he's going to ask for a raise the summer after you do it. So what are we going to do about that here? That is going to be such a tricky conversation to get done. Also because if you're some team, Evan Bouchard should have you salivating. If you do, it's a classic defenseman, an upgrade on this player I'm about to mention, but it's the Morgan Rielly. If you don't have one of those, and I'm not talking this version, but younger 20-goal Morgan Rielly, if you don't have one of those, you're dying to get it. And then the second you have one, you go legs a little wobbly, door kind of squeaks. You start pointing out all the flaws of said player.
I don't know. Like, do you really want to talk about the hockey game too much? Because it was just like an overwhelming performance.
Just one thing. One
what?
Thing. I just saw my favorite thing in the world. I haven't pointed this out in a while. It happens every game, but there's a moment where Podkolzin kind of like kicked Bobrovsky in the second period and he fell down. And the ref did my favorite thing in the world when refs do this. It drives me nuts in the regular season, but in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I just think it's hilarious. When they point to the infraction and tell the guy, get up.
Get up.
Hey,
yeah.
Saw that. Get up.
Get up.
It's like, you're not his coach in U8. You're reffing a cup final game. So, no, not a ton from the game other than that. It is my favorite thing in the world, though, is the ref gesturing get up after he has watched somebody get tripped, punched, hooked, whatever.
Yeah. Stuart Skinner with the big rebound on the second Reinhardt goal.
That's not what you want. Was that a drill? Was he like, here you go, have it, warm me up?
It was very bizarre. Like a muffin from like the top of the circle. He's like, where is the prime scoring spot for me to put this puck?
Yeah, I was going
to
say, he's like, oh, Reinhardt, I heard you're a pretty nasty golfer. Where can I tee this one up for you, bud? Right here?
But
you like the right side of the tee box, left? Oh, you're in the middle. You're a stick. Okay, there we go.
Whatever. How can you talk about goaltending when they scored no goals? They scored a goal.
No.
An absolute garbage time.
No.
What a weird end to that game, too. But like 6 minutes.
It's a shutout, though. Also, like, I know they scored. There was like 5 minutes left in the game. But Podkolzin seemed embarrassed to have scored. You're right.
Should have been.
Weird end to that one. It did not. It honestly never, I never say this about the end of a hockey. It almost felt like the end of an NBA game where it's like the result is very much understood, but it's like, okay, there's a lot. Can we just get to the end here? Is kind of how it felt. Yeah.
And then when we got to the end, Paul Maurice did the thing we thought he would do.
We were watching.
Right into the handshake line.
So he's gesturing. I'm sure you saw this. He's gesturing to Knobloch on the other side. He's like, you want to go? And he's like doing the hands. And then they
magnanimous.
Then a huge, like, aggressive, like, you would have been able to see this from space. He's like, over here. He's like pointing like a guy with the cones at Pearson or whatever. Yeah, it was nuts. But I didn't hear the quote. I wanted to. Oh, man. I saw a fake quote going around from Maurice, and it was immediately clear that it was not real, but I did think it was a chance of it. Of like, Paul Maurice pregame, I don't even think we should be allowed to look at or touch the cup. That thing's for players, baby. And it's like, honestly, after the handshake stuff, who could put anything past him? But, yeah, I loved that he got in the line. I loved it.
Yeah, it was going to happen. That was pretty clear. Gary Bettman got, like, almost universal applause,
obviously,
when he stepped onto the ice, which
they don't know how to be hockey fans down there, and he has not done this, but as close to this as humanly possible, in rigging the league for all of the Florida and no tax league. So I think that is where, it's like, of course, they're not real hockey fans. They don't know you're supposed to boo the commissioner. He's like, oh, my favorite place down here in South Florida. I'm like, oh, God, this is making me sick.
Okay, so Sasha Barkov gets the cup.
Yep.
Second consecutive year as captain of the Florida Panthers. And who does he hand it to first? It caught me by surprise, honestly. I thought maybe this is a Marchand thing. It's been so long for him.
I thought Marchand.
Yeah, he's a veteran player on this team. No, it's Nate Schmidt who's the first to get the cup because it's his first. The Panthers go through every single player who win their first Stanley Cup, including third goaltender Evan Cormier, who has not played in the NHL.
Wild.
He's a 27-year-old from Bowmanville, a former fourth-round pick in 2016. he was the third goalie. Of course, the Panthers only need one goalie, but Evan Cormier winning his first cup. I don't think his name gets to go on the cup. You probably have to play at some point in the National Hockey League, whether it's the regular season or the postseason. But no, all the dudes whose first cup it was getting to hoist it over their heads.
Yeah, I like the idea in theory. And then as it's gone on, I'm like, okay. Like, I feel like I'm at a concert and the band refuses to play a song I've heard of. I'm like, can you play a hit here, guys? The ovation when I think Bob was the first. Sorry to Comrie, the Comries of the world. Bob was the first, like, real Panther to get to hold it. And the change in tone and tenor in that building was nuts. Like, oh, finally, the opener's out of here.
A guy that we know.
A guy we've heard of. And, again, it's like there's not that many. Like, no. It could have been It could have been Luostarinen, and they'd be like, "Oh man, I don't know who this is. Give it to Barkov. I've heard of him. Give it to Tkachuk," and then that's about it. But yeah, great idea in theory, and I will say allowed us to have the like immediate interviews with all the guys because it's like Sam Bennett's like, "Yeah, I got 35 minutes till I go on. Sure, you can ask me a couple of questions." So you like that part of it, but it was a great idea. And then 3 minutes into it, I'm like, okay, come on.
Well,
give it to a real guy.
Yeah, some guys winning their first cup are different than others,
like
including
Nate Schmidt. Yeah.
Well, and Seth Jones.
Yes.
Who, boy, for every criticism you may have, and I didn't hear a lot of this out of the Seth Jones camp that hey, that's what the money's for. How can you force your way out of Chicago? They were the team that paid you all the money, and and your performance would lead some to believe that maybe you're not worth it. That was incorrect. Taken out of the hot mess that is the Blackhawks, he just played the most minutes for the Stanley Cup champions, and man, what a lesson out there for the people that feel like they're just their hockey life is like sand through the hourglass slipping away from them. I guess like Erik Karlsson tried to do the same thing, but he chose the wrong team. I mean, he didn't get to handpick the Penguins, but yeah, it sounds good. Go play with Sid. Not so much, but yeah. Hard to argue with the game plan from Seth Jones.
Yeah. I mean, just a hockey nomad. This guy should be the first draft pick to give talks at whatever symposium they do at the NHL Combine for all of the top 10 picks. He gets to do the thing where he's like, "All right, there's 20 of you here. You're all fringy top 10 picks. Five of you, never going to make it." And they're like, "Oh, my God." And it's like, five of you, career's never in doubt. You're off running in glory. And it's like Gavin McKenna's like pre-hearing that. Like, yeah, I know, that's me. And then 10 of you, man, who knows? And Seth Jones is the perfect example of that. This guy was supposed to be, and, you know, sometimes you do the supposed to be thing because a guy was number one on a list in, you know, November of that year. But Seth Jones was in the conversation, first overall pick his draft year. He gets pantsed by Nathan MacKinnon at the Memorial Cup, scores a hat trick in the first game of that tournament, and McKinnon's number one pick, never looked back. Okay, then ends up in Nashville, makes playoffs here or there. A one-for-one Ryan Johansson trade. Like, think about how long ago that was. That was earth-shattering news in the NHL.
Yeah.
Okay? He then goes to Columbus, where it's not going amazing, but they're making playoffs every year. They've won series. I don't know if you'll remember this.
Well, that was a play-in tournament
series.
I was told that was not going to be viewed as a playoff series
I view it as at least made the playoffs. So that's how I'm going to choose to view it. Then he's like, okay, I'm in Columbus. Things are getting worse here. It can't get worse. Wrong. You're off to Chicago where things are going terribly. And then, bang, new lease on life. You're a Florida Panther. And quite frankly, he's never looking back after this. Like, Seth Jones is just off and running. He's got the contract. He's in Florida. That team might not be this forever. They're not going to fall off a cliff immediately. And guess what? Now that he's proven it, somebody else is dying to get him if that thing goes belly up and they need to move on from the core pieces here. So, no, Seth Jones is now destined to give the talk to top five picks about you never know how it's going, nothing is promised, just because you're not in a good situation now doesn't mean one can't come of it. Just because you are in a good situation doesn't mean it'll last forever. So, yeah, I think he's kind of perfect for that.
A circuitous route for him, as it was for Corey Perry since winning that cup so early in his career. And now 5 of 6 years losing in the cup final. That is a record. Marian Hossa like laughs at that. He's like, "That's wow. Holy cow. That I remember when that was my thing, and then I eventually won a cup. 5 of 6 years. Ridiculous." He does have a cup, so he'll always have his hat to hang on that. And he's a future Hall of Famer, he's a Hart Trophy winner. But boy, like, what is this? Third paragraph of the Wikipedia entry?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's part and parcel of the second prime of his career, right? Is that he was the guy who kept coming so close and so close and so close and just unable to get over the finish line. And I do wonder what has that got to feel like for the frustration that Corey Perry feels versus the frustration that Connor McDavid feels? Because it's not that Corey Perry is not a factor in this. He absolutely was one. Or teams wouldn't have been salivating for him, and he wouldn't have played in the last five of the last six cup finals. Like, I think there's an element to that there. But I also think when you're Corey Perry, you understand your station in the game. You understand your station in life. And it's not that you're accepting of it. I imagine it leads to even more frustration. He's like, God, Could you imagine if I had this many cracks at it when I was 23?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we'll all look back at life and wish we would have tried harder at a moment here or there. And I think that that'll be the thing for Perry. It's not that he'll be sitting there wondering, like, what could I have done in these last 5 years? It's, man, why couldn't I have had these chances when I was, you know, Hart Trophy Pairs?
He sure is getting opportunities to play with the Oilers' best players in the world, and had a two-on-one that, maybe a sliding doors moment. He doesn't bang it off the side of the net, and it goes in the net. It's a different deal. Okay, we're going to get to, obviously, a lot of the Cup Final, but last one before we take the break and talk about the Blue Jays. Exhilarating.
I don't know what time it is.
Exhilarating win yesterday. It turns out that even if you're an American superstar hockey player playing in the playoffs, you can reveal the injury status that you've been playing with that has hampered you all postseason and kept you out of Four Nations face-off games.
I don't believe you.
Austin Matthews missed a game of the Four Nations face-off, but then he played all the regular season games and the postseason games.
Yeah.
A shell of himself. Seemed.
I would not disagree.
Matthew Tkachuk, I mean, he did finish with a pretty lofty point total and had a big goal in that game yesterday as well. So the injury was the adductor torn off the bone, sounds bad, and a hernia on that side of his body as well.
If you had to pick, would you rather the hernia be on the same side or the other side? Isolate all the pain?
I think so. I think that makes all the sense in the world, as opposed to spreading it out. Is at least you know where it all exists. It's on one side of your body.
Don't touch me.
That sounds bad, though.
But, I would agree.
And again, like Austin Matthews, his Team USA brethren, is letting us into the doctor's office immediately following the hoisting of a Stanley Cup, and we go months and months and months and into the next training camp, and we never hear anything about what Austin Matthews was dealing with other than the weird hit.
Well, and honestly, it's disgusting that you would even ask. It's not like it's a thing that matters at all. It's not like it's part of the lineage of the sport. No, it's ridiculous, man. You hear this. I will say it is when you're the player that has the perception of playing through everything, and nothing bothers you. Not that it doesn't affect your play, but that you are Superman, it behooves you to run to the mic and be like, look how banged up I am. When you're not that guy and you come out and say, I have a back, or again, whatever it is. And this isn't saying don't tell us. I do think we have a right to know, especially now that the season is over. I think there's an element to that, but I also think it doesn't come across the same way as when you're Superman who's, you know, running through glass and crashing through bodies, and it's like, yes, look how banged up I was to do it. It feels like it's excuse-making, or it can feel like it's excuse-making if it comes from Austin Matthews. I think that's the argument. If you want me to just do a Gree Boy radio and say, I agree, because that is how I ultimately feel, but I think that I'm trying to explain it, and I think that's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, it's not an excuse, Austin. We know you weren't 100%. You were 100% in previous game sevens in which you didn't score any goals.
That's true.
I didn't take you off the hook for all the other winner-take-all games in which you've scored no goals. But yeah, this year, not your normal self.
I would really like somebody. I feel like this has been dumb, but I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And don't perk up like I'm going to ask you to do it, Azo. This is like a Sportsnet blogger job type thing. I need the craziest injuries, like a rundown. Like Patrice Bergeron, I always try to go back and look what it is. It's like, in my head, punctured lung. We're just going to live with that being what it was.
I think that was it.
Okay, well, see, but I want it in writing, and I'd like a list of the 10 craziest things we hear about at the end of this. Because an abductor torn off the bone, that feels bad.
Again, no, not just an abductor. Sorry. An adductor.
Adductor. What one's that?
It's different.
An ab is like...
Yeah,
no,
it's not that. Adductor is actually, I think, on your leg. It's like near the groin.
Near the groin.
Yeah.
Pulling away from the bone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not ideal.
No, I'd say not.
Sasha Barkov had like a lacerated hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed he had a Band-Aid.
Yeah. They glue it, super glue it together. Anyways.
Feel free to look excited also, Barkov. They finally did get around to that when they handed him the cup, but he was like standing there in the aftermath, and I know he was just like looking for family, but he looked bored. He was like, okay, going to ask me a question, going to hand me a cup, been here, done that. One last thing on the general presentation of it all. I think this is a COVID thing. We created it where there's fireworks and there's like a banner behind it. Get that out of here. I watched them hand out the cup my whole life, and I never needed a banner to remind me that the Stanley Cup is here. The only good thing they do about it now is I do like them announcing the Stanley Cup like he's the president of the United States. Like, and now the Stanley Cup, and everyone rises, and they, like, roll it out. I feel like before it was just on the ice. Like, it just, like, eventually made its way out there. You'd see it in the corner sometimes. So that's the part of the presentation I like. But, no, I don't need the glitz. I don't need the glamour. Get your banner out of here. We all know they won the cup. Like, we all know. Maybe the people in the building needed a reminder that that's what they were doing.
Yeah. Who is the heir apparent to Phil Pritchard is a good question. I feel like we
Well, he's there. The guy who does the exact same job as him, whose name we don't know, I feel like is probably, like, if we know one of their names, I feel like he's the more senior one, right?
Yeah, but I feel like they're the same age. If that's, like, if Phil Pritchard is going to one day say, this is too hard. Like, if
I can't sit in a sauna with Finnish guys anymore.
Yeah. Is the other guy just going to take over? Is there a it feels like, you know, the way sports work, it's like there's a Phil Pritchard Jr. sitting around somewhere.
Yeah, probably. I will say, you know what? I'm going to do some digging on this because it was a story. I love you, Mom, but sometimes you hear a story from your mother and you're just like, I don't know what's real about this. It's like she knew somebody who was a keeper of the cup. So I'm gonna do some digging on that and see who's next in line.
Okay.
No promises, but there's my homework for the summer.
All right, you're on that. Okay, we'll get back, obviously, to the Florida Panthers. Second consecutive Stanley Cup victory, and Connor McDavid, again, going wanting. But when we come back, the Blue Jays snap their three-game losing streak in rather dramatic fashion against the Diamondbacks. That and more next, as we are live from the Joe Carter Celebrity Classic from Glen Abbey Golf Course in Oakville. It's the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Season for the Toronto Blue Jays is hit by Addison Barger. Really simple question. How did that feel?
Pretty freaking awesome.
I think the trust in Barge right now is pretty damn high against righties. So you want guys to be comfortable. And today it worked out for both parties, both Vlad and Addy. Kind of the whole point is to kind of keep lefties away from Addy. Huge swing from him, huge swing from Bo, both with two strikes. I love the way they went about it. And we hit some balls hard all night, and they played really good defense in the outfield. And just two huge swings there from Bowen.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. We are live from the Joe Carter Celebrity Classic in Glen Abbey Golf Course in Oakville. Addison Barger hitting in the two-hole for the first time this season. Bichette, Barger, Vlad. Early returns pretty good as Bo and Barger go back-to-back in the ninth inning to hand the Blue Jays their 22nd comeback win of the season. On the other end, so the Blue Jays are one of the best comeback teams in all of baseball.
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks are one of the worst teams at protecting leads in all of baseball. That was their 23rd blown save by the bullpen this season.
I can't wait for the rest of the series. Just hearing you lay out those specific numbers right there. I don't want to cut Vlad out of this, but man, Bo, Barger, back-to-back. Alliteration is great. We love that. Yeah, man, seeing him come up in that spot, it was freaking awesome, to quote Addison Barger. I think it's important for guys to, you know, not so much for Bichette. It's important in entirely different reasons and entirely different ways. But for Barger to have moments like that, not just, hey, you know, you come through and it's a big knock in the third. No, to have moments that matter where you you feel, you know, you don't feel like you won the game. You did win the game. I just can only imagine the confidence boost it gives to a guy who, I mean, quite frankly, probably doesn't need any help in that regard when everything that comes off of his bat or out of his hand is a laser.
It was, and he had some lasers from right field as well. Some of them bouncing past defenders. Well, one, not his fault, as Bobichet couldn't get a tag down on Corbin Carroll, which would have been a spectacular outfield assist on a very fast fella off the wall. And the other one trying to throw out the runner at third base, a little offline to third baseman Ernie Clement, and allows a run to score. Eventually ends up an earned run for Chris Bass, but that's all besides
but
the point.
But he got it back, so it doesn't matter.
Barger did. Yeah,
I'd say.
And I don't want him to be any less aggressive from right field, despite the fact that occasionally it's going to result in an error, and occasionally it's going to make Bo Bichette look bad because he couldn't handle a short hop. But no, this Blue Jays team, they're okay. The offense has been a lot better the last month and a half, 2 months now, right? No question. But it's been on the strength of guys like George Springer. And when Dalton Varsho was here, Dalton Varsho and like Ernie Clement against lefty pitching. And boy, they've gotten a little bit out of Jonathan Class A and those types of fellas. It's time now for the top of the order to do some of the heavy lifting. And it is not lost on me that, tell me if I'm wrong here, it felt like the drumbeat, and part of it is like the questions I was asking Kevin Barker, did focus around Vlad Jr., but it did feel like the loudest point of the season in which it's like, okay, Vlad, you're doing all right. Nobody thinks you're having a horrible season, but how about look like the guy that has $500 million headed his way, has his first homer on the first pitch of an at-bat this season, which, again, for the uninitiated, a 0-0 count is where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has hit the most home runs in his entire career. He had not hit one on the first pitch until yesterday. Follows that up with a double. Barger and Bo Bichette carrying the mail in the ninth inning. Yeah, you want the bottom, middle of your order to produce. It's about the aircraft carrier fellas, and I guess Addison Barger has to be considered among them. Yeah, winning the occasional game for you, just like perilously few games have played out the way yesterday did.
Yeah, no, you look at it. You get homers from all of the guys that we're talking about here, and it just allows you to dream on what the best version of the Blue Jays offense is. And I guess the thing that's allowed you to dream on it through the start of the season has been all the other guys that we've talked about, right? It's not been a three-man team. It's been kind of the exact opposite. It's been, you know, to varying degrees, waiting for the three men to do their thing. And I'm going to remove Barger from the three and put Santander in there for this part of the equation because you've been waiting for him to do it. And obviously, you still are given the injury there. But, yeah, you need your best players to carry you. You know, go ahead, talk about this in any other sport you want. Go pick any other baseball team you want. Okay, it's like, yes, the Dodgers have a deep offense, but Ohtani just completely stops hitting, and so does Freeman or Betts. All of a sudden, that lineup's going to look pretty different. The Phillies team that just swept you, I don't know, Schwarber and Harper go in the tank. It's going to look very, very different. And it's not that Vlad's gone in the tank, but I also think that the start that this team got off to was maybe not overly surprising, but certainly the rosiest outcome that I think a lot of people had. And that generally speaking, doesn't lead to criticism for the best player on the team. So I think that's why it's taken so long to kind of get to this point.
Yeah, it was a game that I was fully prepared to talk about. Blue Jays actually kind of just getting BABIP because they looked like the better team offensively. They looked like they were a threat to score each and every half inning, and they finished with the top 9 exit velocity swings of the game. They had 11 swings that resulted in exit velocities of over 100 miles an hour. Eventually, it results in, yeah, the 2 home runs in the ninth inning, but they were all over Diamondbacks pitching the whole game.
The entire game. Yeah, you mentioned it. The top 9 exit velos. Vlad topping the bunch with 112 off the bat when he jumped over that first pitch in the third there. That's what you want to see with this team, with the, you know, the approach. And if you're going to believe in Popkins and whatever he has unlocked here, it's got to look like this. Yes, sometimes it's smart at bats. Yes, sometimes it's taking your walk. Yes, sometimes it's just going the other way. A lot of times, though, the best teams in baseball, you know what it looks like? Screaming off the bat, and that's what you saw last night. And I don't want to get away from the point we're making that it's about Vlad, it's about Bo, it's about Barger. about Davis Schneider giving you 108 off the bat. I know it's a fly out there. George Springer comes through with 107. Kirk does the same thing for you. So it is not just simply the big boys doing it. Now, Kirk and Springer have very much been the big boys this year, but I think that goes to what you've seen with this Jays offense, that it doesn't necessarily – it'd be nice if it's one or two guys on occasion, but it usually doesn't have to be the way it's played out.
And it's not surprising that it happens at home. Rogers Center has been just a homer haven for everybody this season. I don't know if this is updated after yesterday's game, but going into yesterday's game, and I know you're not supposed to take park factors in a one-year sample, but Rogers Center playing is the third easiest ballpark to hit a home run, and the Blue Jays are enjoying life there by weighted runs created plus. So it's just like catch-all offensive metric. Blue Jays are the second-best offensive team in baseball at home and the best in the American League. The only team better than them in their home ballpark is one of the historically great offenses in baseball, and they need to be because they have no pitching, the Dodgers.
Yep.
The Blue Jays are far and away the best American League team offensively in their home ballpark. Now, conversely, on the road, it's been a struggle. Weirdly, they're 26 on the road. That's not just that's comparing the other teams to what they are on the road as well. The Blue Jays, for whatever reasons, cannot figure it out offensively on the road. But yeah, the thing we thought Rogers Center might be when the new configurations were figured out, and maybe it's finally because they've closed off the tunnels there or something, like airflow, the roof being open, climactic factors.
Sure.
I don't know.
You're saying words.
I all I'm telling you is that Rogers Center feels like, I don't know, Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium or Coors Field, honestly, this season.
Yeah, it's nuts. I do think a part of that, it's, you know, not lost on me that it's the uptick and where the Jays are at in that statistic as well. It's like the team that is going to be a part of every home game played at Rogers Center is actually hitting the ball over the fence on occasion. So I think that helps. That would help, especially if you're just looking at the kind of one-year sample size. But yeah, no, I think that also just from an aesthetic standpoint, you know, maybe not the way you design it with how important a couple of, you know, fly ball pitchers can be on this team, but just from an aesthetic standpoint, yeah, I like watching dingers. So I am happy that the park is finally coming to fruition, because that was a big talking point when initially the renos were happening, as you thought it was going to be that way, and it didn't exactly happen. Who knew? You just had to close a barn door somewhere, and all of a sudden balls start flying out.
So history yesterday as well for the Blue Jays. First time in franchise history they had four fellas play center field. As they were going down like Spinal Tap drummers, it was Jonathan Class A getting hit, and then Miles Straw twisting his ankle, and then they pinch hit for Alan Roden, and Will Robertson's playing center field, and they asked Addison Barger, like, were you capable of playing center field fast? He's like, yeah, I never done it before, but sure.
Why not? Just run out there, catch a ball, not that hard, throw it.
Truly. Just a weird game all around. But, yeah, the Blue Jays improved to 39-33. And all of a sudden, oh, Brent.
One other thing on the center field. Disrespectful to Ernie Clement. I've heard Shulman talking to him about, like, do you even have gloves for all the positions? He's like, nah, I just go grab one. So I would have thought Clement could have been in there. I know you like him in third, but, yeah.
Yeah, he could have been. Blue Jays now three games back of the New York Yankees, who have lost five consecutive and have been shut out in three consecutive games for like the fourth time in franchise history. And you'll agree with me in saying that the Yankees
that awesome.
Have had
yes.
a long franchise history. That franchise has been around for a minute or
I've
two.
Yep.
And like very rarely in the history of their franchise have they ever been shut out in three consecutive games. But that has happened. It's happened to the Angels as well, of all teams. But, man, you want to talk about the American League just as a whole being the flattened talent pool and it's wide open. How about the division, right? Like, yeah, the Yankees are no perfect team by any stretch of the imagination. Aaron Judge has been a pretty close to a perfect player. He's going through, like, a little bit of a dip right now, yep. And all of a sudden the Yankees can't score.
No, they can't, and this is the inverse of what the Jays have kind of had going on this year, right? Like, so much of the Yankees season has been papered over by Judge and what he's able to do. When you are a one-man band or a two-man band and the one man stops playing or he needs a night off or, you know, the hits dry up on occasion, you're going to see that. So I think that is exactly the Yankees. Obviously, they are capable. They're a relatively deep team, but it's so much of it built on Judge that I just think you you should look at a stat like that, and that allows you to appreciate all you've got from the Ernie Clements of the world, or, you know, maybe less so your Alan Rodens, but the guy, Miles Straw, who even has given this team a lot. I think when you look at the Yankees and you see them shut out in that way, it should make you not, like, appreciate things more, but it should illuminate how well things, relatively speaking, have gone for the Jays.
No, what it should do, it should make you think about anything being possible for this Blue Jays team, because they are also not a perfect team, as exemplified by the fact that they are still three games out of the top spot in the American League East. And yeah, they only have three starting pitchers, and we can talk about the developments on the starting pitching front yesterday. But when you talk about the trade deadline, which is, still a month and a bit away, and the incremental adds that need to happen for the Blue Jays, man, doesn't it make you think about maybe a bigger swing? If the Yankees are this, and they're a good team, and maybe they're still at the top of the division, but it's one or two or three games, and the Blue Jays have obvious holes, and maybe those holes are starting to get filled in by Max Scherzer's return, and maybe eventually Anthony Santander returns and looks like his old self. But boy, if the Yankees are an imperfect team, and you're talking about not just a playoff spot, but the idea of winning the division, and if you're winning the division, the Tigers are the only team in the American League that's kind of gone away and hid and looked like a lock for one of those buys in the American League. Why couldn't the Blue Jays be one of those teams, the second team with a buy in the American League?
No, the reason why is because the things we thought about the Blue Jays at the start of the season are still to a certain extent true. But man, Addison Barger coming in and being this completely changes things. The fact that you've got the bounce back year from Kirk. If I just told you, hey, you are going to add two bats, I'm not going to tell you their names. Maybe they already exist and they're better versions of themselves. You would feel loftier about it. I think the more interesting thing regards to why not the Blue Jays is, what does that look like? Forever, we would have assumed, well, obviously, go get a bat. And I'm not saying don't go get a bat, but are we sure it's not go get an arm is the way that it would be going if you are going to be uber aggressive and have the why not us year? I think it's kind of, that's the crazy thing to me, is how quickly we've arrived at a place that, for me, I feel like I'd start with the pitching and then go to the offense from where I'd be looking at adding.
There's no question, especially now that Bowden Francis, he has a shoulder impingement.
Was the problem.
Dealing with it for like two or three starts, but nothing like out of the ordinary. Everybody's dealing with stuff, apparently, according to John Schneider.
Sure.
Nah, this is, I love this part of baseball that was, it's kind of the Joffrey Lupul of it all, where, any pitcher, have you ever thrown a baseball?
Especially not supposed to do it, yeah.
Yeah, if you're over 40 years old like myself, I don't think my shoulder will ever be the same playing catch with my children. But no, it hurts, and I'm sure you could find inflammation on any MRI. But a professional pitcher. The Blue Jays found it with Bowden Francis. Timely, because he stanks right now. And they may be, like I said, getting reinforcements in the starting pitching department. So a couple of roster moves yesterday, and one of the significant ones also. So Francis frees up a 26-man roster spot going on the injured list. Eric Swanson DFA'd though off the 40-man roster in entirely, a couple of years of battling injuries and the personal stuff with his kid at spring training last year, and being the focal point of a Teoscar Hernandez trade, who only hits in the middle of a Dodgers lineup. I know he's been a free agent, he's signed an extension since then, but and Adam Macko's working his way
could
back
be a guy.
He could be in the mix as well, but holy cow. You let this be a lesson to all the future Major League Baseball general managers who are listening to the sound of my voice. Don't trade your sluggers for relievers.
Yeah, I would agree, especially non-bona fide closers. If you're going to trade the middle of your order bat, I would like Mariano Rivera to come back. And he doesn't exist any well. He does exist. He's just not a baseball player anymore. For your shoulder there, Benny, I think we got to get you on an R.A. Dickey knuckleball program there. Just something not as violent.
Playing catch with my kids.
Yeah, not as violent as the two seamer or the four seamer I imagine you're throwing them. I think we gotta mix that in for you. I'm worried about you. Your shoulder. Who cares about it for catch purposes? What would you do if you couldn't golf?
Yeah, no, I can golf even with my shoulder in excruciating pain.
Well, I know. I'm not worried about your ability to golf tomorrow. This is years down the line situation. I'm just looking out for you, buddy.
Oh, no, I'm like Matthew Tkachuk. Even with my shoulder not attached to my body, I'd still be playing golf. Anyways, before we take the break, I also want to mention the Rafael Devers of it all yesterday. He does speak.
Yes.
He makes his Giants debut.
He has a couple of hits in a loss. Giants did lose 3-2 to the Guardians. By the way, the Red Sox also lost and couldn't score, which may be an issue for them without their best hitter. But he does his media availability. He does it through a translator. I assume he did all his media in Boston with a translator as well.
From the clips I've seen, yeah, there's the odd, like, I'm going to be like, woohoo, good win that I can do myself. But if you're going to ask me a real question, yeah, I'd like to understand it and be understood. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did, I think there were, the clips I saw where the questions were being asked in English and he was answering them in Spanish immediately, like, didn't need the translation of the question, like, understood the question, but was answering them in Spanish and then translated to English. One, he was asked about, hey, the drama that existed in Boston and the personality clashes, and obviously well coached up, gave that the total Heisman and said, I'm not talking about that at all. So coached up, in fact, that Buster Posey, president of baseball operations, was like, I love that answer. Great answer. Like, it was almost like a joke how much they told him to just shut up about the Red Sox of it all.
My personal favorite part of this is not what you've heard from Devers, but the reporting that's now coming out of, like, he really didn't like the sucking up of Campbell of going over to learn to play first base. It's like, as everything happened with Devers in Boston, like, hey, man, you didn't ask me to. I'm not going to learn now. The young, fresh-faced rookie. Mm. And I got to be honest, this would irk you at work, right? If your boss is like, hey, do this, and you don't want to, and the kid who just showed up eight minutes ago is like, no problem. And do you need a coffee while I'm on my way, boss? It's like, that would drive you nuts. So I thought that part of it was extremely funny as well.
Yeah.
A lot of this is funny.
It's very funny, including him being asked about what position he wants to play the Giants. He's like, wherever they want me to play, I'm game. First base, third base, center field, shortstop. You got it, buddy.
Well, I mean, Buster Posey famously played all nine innings in a college game. So he has the right man there to let him play any position he wants.
Anyways.
I don't think center field's in his future.
Good stuff. Another reason why the Blue Jays could be very aggressive buyers at the deadline, because despite the fact that, Red Sox added some pitching maybe a little bit and handing the reins to the youngsters offensively, probably going to miss Rafi Devers' a bat. All right. When we come back, back into the Panthers' cup-clinching win over the Edmonton Oilers, are they a dynasty? And how confident are you that McDavid will eventually get his? That and more next as the Fan Morning Show continues from the Joe Carter Celebrity Classic, Glen Abbey Golf Course in Oakville, Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like I said before, that's in the past. I'm moving forward. I really don't want to talk about it.
I really like his answers, by the way.